You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
We all know climate change is a problem. It is generally portrayed as an exclusively biophysical problem that will impact things like our weather and oceans, agriculture and water availability. But climate change also has an impact on mental health. To discuss the ways climate change is currently and will continue to have an effect on mental health globally and here in New Zealand, Ella Christensen spoke with David Menkes, Associate Professor of Psychological Medicine in the Auckland University Medical School. She began by asking him to explain what current and future risks to mental health we face as a result of climate change.
I mean, it's a big topic, and I think so we can really touch on a few of the categories without going into a whole lot of detail. But certainly there are sort of the direct physical impacts of climate change, including, I guess, most conspicuously, sea level rise, where we've got some striking examples in our Pacific neighbors of, you know, actual loss of habitable land. But probably more significant on a global scale is going to be the frequency of extreme weather events. And there seems no doubt at all that the frequency and severity of extreme weather has increased in various parts of the planet. And we haven't had a whole lot of that here, but in other parts of the world, major impacts in terms of drought and flooding and extreme weather of various sorts. So it has been quite disruptive, and a lot of people have been killed, and many, many more have been displaced by the extreme weather. And I guess this is really just a taster of what might be on the horizon if we continue on the path we are. And certainly both the sea level rise and the extreme weather events would be expected to increase over the coming decade.
And along those lines, then, I'm wondering, what is the role of mental health conversations as these massive changes are happening? Because for people who, I think for most people, it's going to be extremely disruptive and unexpected. And it seems that that's going to have an emotional and psychological impact.
Absolutely. Hey, look, there's something you may have seen in the paper we wrote about how the World Health Organization has, you know, stepped up to address this challenge. And it really is big ups to them for having put this, you know, center stage on the priority list. And so what they say is that climate change will be the defining issue for health systems in the 21st century. I mean, that's it. That's the top of the list. I'd probably put the threat of nuclear war up there somewhere.
Yeah.
given
apparently,
the events of last
week. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But that's on the list. But here it is. Number one, they say, is climate change. And they go on to say that health professionals have the knowledge, cultural authority, and responsibility to protect health from climate change. Okay, big task, and, you know, we cannot shirk that responsibility. In many cases, we're not going to really be able to prevent it. We're going to have to be talking about damage control and mitigation, because it's already happening. There are already people dying. There are already streams of refugees that are set to increase over the coming decades. So we've really got to gear up. And I think, you know, health systems generally, but including mental health, we need to get ready for this. And because, you know, even if we, you know, stopped burning fossil fuels today, we still have that huge signal that's going to continue to disrupt climate for the next decades.
Mm-hmm.
Even if we slow down and turn that ship around, you know, we're going to have to be dealing with this. And the problem is, of course, that if we don't slow that ship down and turn it around, it's going to get worse and possibly cataclysmic if we reach that tipping point of 1.5 or 2 degrees warming.
There's not a lot of indication that the changes necessary are happening right now. So
no, indeed not. And I guess your listeners will probably be aware of some of the reasons for that tipping point. It now seems, you know, pretty clear that, you know, once we cross that threshold, if we don't, you know, do something pretty drastic, pretty quick, we will get there. And once that happens, apparently one of the main triggers is the melting of a lot of ice in Arctic and subarctic regions, tundra, et cetera, you know, like across the Eurasian landmass. Mm-hmm. But apparently when the ice covering that tundra melts, a whole lot of trapped methane comes out,
mm-hmm.
right? So we get what's called the runaway effect, or a positive feedback loop, where you get past that threshold, a bit more warming leads to a process that generates more and more warming, and so on it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really what we need to prevent. It's absolutely critical that we somehow slow the ship down before we get to that tipping point. And, you know, the estimates are that we could do it. It's still possible to do it, but time is literally of the essence here.
I wonder what your maybe suggestions are for people who, because hearing all of this information is very overwhelming, and I sort of wonder if people aren't as engaged or active around climate change because of that reason.
Absolutely, no, that's certainly true, and you could make the same argument about the risk of nuclear weapons being used. That it's, you know, so huge and almost unfathomable what could happen, that it's easier just not to think about it. Of course, that's not a very adaptive thing in the long run, and our children and grandchildren will not thank us for it. So we really need to, you know, kind of grapple with reality. And I think, you know, the way to do that is to realize that, yeah, there is a difference that ordinary people can make. And one of the main things we can do is keep it on the agenda. Keep talking about it as you and I are right now. You know, talk to your neighbors, talk to your friends, and, you know, wherever possible, bring it into the here and now. Do you really need to drive to the shop? You know, like, you know, what's wrong with a bike? You know, what's wrong with walking? If you can, if there's an alternative, go for it. I mean, I'm happily in a department at the university that enables this sort of thing by allowing us to, you know, meet with pretty good audiovisual technology. So I'm meeting with my department in Grafton, for example, a couple times a month via Zoom, you know, and it saves that, you know, tedious trip up and down to Auckland. My attitude might change, incidentally, once we get a regular rail service running between Hamilton and Auckland. But in the meantime, going up and down that road is sort of the last thing I want to do with half a day. And so, you know, accordingly, there's all these little decisions that we make about how we manage our day-to-day lives. And, you know, I think it is important, not so much for the absolute contribution it makes to, you know, reducing, in this case, fossil fuel consumption, but also the you know, the sort of collective vibe of what we do and how we communicate and how we live. You know, that should be out there. It should be talked about. It should be celebrated. And I think, you know, that it's just something that needs to be much more visible and part of day-to-day life and conversation.
Yeah, there's it seems like there's kind of this strange social silence around climate change when I bring it up often, and it feels like conversations don't go very far because people are kind of like, oh, yeah, that sucks. Yeah, it's terrible. And that's kind of it.
Yeah, and part of that surely comes from the sense that, oh, well, we can't do anything about it, and, you know, the world is screwed, and, you know, what the hell, might as well just, you know, enjoy, you know, what we can while it's here kind of thing. You know, ultimately, you got to understand that there's a lot of people who think that way, and that we've got to manage that sort of, you know, disconnection from reality. I think they outnumber the deniers, actually, the apathetic middle, who probably would, you know, accept the scientific evidence and probably agree, if they bothered to think about it or talk about it, that, yeah, well, this is probably happening, and, yeah, we probably all are, in a way, contributing, but it's too big a problem, and, you know, I just can't think about that now because I've got, you know, my own life to live, or, you know, an exam to study for, or a job to do, or whatever it is. You know, people conveniently shut it out when it seems unmanageable or too big or too scary. And I think we need to break that down and just bring it home to people, is that, yeah, that's a very common experience. That's a human way of dealing with things. But another human way of dealing with things is by keeping it out there, keeping it, you know, in the public discourse, and making sure that how you live is consistent with those values and that understanding.
I also wonder what you have to say about guilt in relation to this issue, because as just from my personal experience, trying to make all of these individual behavior changes can sometimes make me feel constantly guilty and kind of neurotic about my behavior, because once you start becoming aware of these issues, it's in everything that you do, and it can be kind of difficult to try to do the right thing all the time when often there's not a good choice.
that's absolutely right, and I think this comes back to another, you know, aspect of human nature, really, that in terms of motivating any kind of behavior, but in this case, motivating, you know, responsible, socially useful behavior, like, you know, living well and doing what you can to look after the planet, that there's an optimal level of concern or motivation. And if you have too little or too much, you tend to either not bother, get, you know, paralyzed with anxiety or guilt. So really, we want to help people, you know, calibrate to that happy middle ground where they're concerned but not paralyzed.
Yeah.
You want people to understand that, hey, you know, we're all in this, and, you know, different people have different thresholds for behaving well and responsibly, and I think what we need to do is allow for a lot of individual, you know, difference in that respect, and encourage people to find, if you like, their sweet spot, where they are, you know, engaged and motivated, but not subject to you know, too much in the way of guilt or paralysis. So everybody's different. Everybody's got their own formula. But I think recognizing the fact that we do have that optimal level of concern and motivation to really do any kind of productive behavior. So that might be, you know, studying for an exam, getting a job application together, you know, organizing a party, whatever it is you mean to do. You can have too much or too little, and what we want is just right. You know, that happy middle ground of enough concern, ideally in concert with other people. So, I mean, we are in this together. And that's why I think, you know, keeping it on the agenda to be speaking with your friends and your family and your neighbors and whoever about this stuff is perfectly legit. And it should be much more the norm that things that are that important receive the appropriate amount of airplay. So I guess that's a good note on which to refer back to the radio show that you're doing, because this is, you know, exactly what should be out there and for people to be thinking about and responding to.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.